Welcome. You're listening to part two of the episode Gender Queer Kids and Transitioning on Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area on CICK 93.9 FM. I'm Christine Bruce, going solo in the host seat today. However, I do have a very special guest. I want to introduce you to Laszlo's mom, Reagan Polgar. Reagan has the unique perspective of knowing Laszlo from birth and watching their journey as a genderqueer person. In the first half of this conversation, Reagan and I explored what it means to be genderqueer and some of the complications, social, emotional, and medical, that accompany being genderqueer, particularly around transitioning. In this episode, we want to address the political complications and what we're seeing in the media. Reagan brings a passion to this conversation that her child, Laszlo, can't always express. It's heartening to hear someone on this level of dedication, this ability to be the kind of ally that all genderqueer people need us to be if they're going to contribute to society and feel confirmed in who they are. Here's a topic, how to talk about transition. Now, as I consider this topic, I wonder if we even need to discuss it. I mean, this feels like me asking Laszlo about their junk, because that would be inappropriate and awkward. Mm-hmm. And unless Laszlo brings up transitioning surgeries, just like any of my friends or acquaintances might or might not bring up their own surgeries, mm-hmm. it's not up to me to ask about it or to discuss the topic with others. But Reagan, you shared an anecdote about an interaction with a family member that puts really good perspective on this.
Yeah, I had an uncle who was really worried and like, oh, are you going to let him get the surgery? He's talking about my son's genitals and about surgery on my son's genitals, and I was so uncomfortable, and so I just flipped the table. Cool, I guess if we know each other like that, I've like heard the whispers of you having some problems in the bathroom lately, seeing the doctor. So what's that all about? Do you have fissures? Do you have hemorrhoids? And he just went red, like totally red, right? And he looked so uncomfortable, right? And I was like, do we not have this kind of a relationship where you're comfortable talking to me? And I was like, so you can understand, that's exactly how uncomfortable I feel talking about my son's genitals with you.
Yeah.
You and your daughter have that kind of a relationship. You and your doctor have that kind of a relationship. You and your wife have that kind of a relationship. There are people in your life that you definitely would talk about the state of your, you know what I mean? Like, and you might surface level talk about, we don't have that relationship.
Yeah.
And if you're not comfortable with me asking about, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if this would be an overstep for me, then you now know we don't have that kind of a relationship. We don't know each other like that.
And you don't get to give me advice about what my son is doing.
Yeah.
People really need to put the mirror up for a minute to make it obvious to them how they've overstepped.
I don't think my uncle realized what a dehumanizing question it was until he was being treated that way.
Yeah.
We don't talk about this with just anybody because it is personal and it is private. And you're like, you're dehumanizing it. You're dehumanizing a person because like, I'm just becoming this number. I'm becoming this patient. I'm becoming this set of symptoms. I'm becoming the surgeries. I also have been in situations where I've like unintentionally overshared or accidentally overshared. And I've had some people who are shitty about it, but I've also had some people who have extended me that grace in return. And again, that's also given me an example of, oh, this is how to handle this gracefully.
Yeah.
Until I had a couple people who had handled that situation gracefully with me, I actually didn't know how to handle it.
Exactly.
Right. And so now that I have that experience, now I know I can extend it again and be like, I am so sorry. Why don't we pick this up again another time?
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing when it comes to transitional stuff and talking about medical things. I think it's okay that like, okay, you accidentally overstepped, you accidentally overasked, and a person is like, hey, I don't want you to talk about that was an overask. And then I think that it doesn't need to be more than that. It can be the same as these conversations like, oh, that was TMI. That was, I guess we could call it TMQ. Too many questions.
Yeah.
And then to not get so offended by it. If you really genuinely want to have a relationship with people in your life, then you need to decenter yourself when it comes to stuff like that. So when if somebody expresses a boundary like that, just respect it.
Yeah. And just be gentle. Just be gentle.
Yeah. And there is something too to say like from the outside, from being on the outsider thing, one of the things about keeping yourself safe as a person that's sort of outside is we're very hypervigilant for people that show remorse. If so, there's a big difference, and you'll learn it very quickly when you're surrounded by people who are outcasts, is that there's a person who makes a mistake and shows remorse is somebody who's growing and somebody who's actually changing. A person who makes a mistake and then doubles down on it and blames you for it, they are not growing. And anybody who has lack of safety in their life is hearing for that. So if you're a person in the world, and especially if you're dealing with somebody who's disenfranchised in any way from the protective circles of society, if you're talking to somebody like that and you show no remorse, this is a safety issue now.
Yeah. They're going to put up a wall.
There's a wall now.
Yeah.
Right?
You got
to
protect yourself.
And they have to.
Yeah.
Because if they didn't and they got hurt, then other people are going to blame them. What did you think was going to happen? That person didn't show any remorse. That person hurt you and didn't even care. What did you expect by continuing to give them chances?
Yeah. I want to really quickly talk about the regulation of gender and transition because it's mm-hmm. become such a hot topic, especially in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know anything on this disturbing changes to regulating transition and to how schools manage genderqueer issues in general in Canada, but I'd like to go on record to say that I feel like it's disturbing that people in authority are trying to interrupt how families manage it. Mm-hmm. I don't like that youths have to go home and explain things to their parents because that may be a safety issue.
Yeah.
It makes me really uncomfortable, and I feel very protective of Laszlo's privacy and their ability mm-hmm. to make these decisions with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, you must be faced with that on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah. This one hits really, really like almost ancestrally as well, because it's hard not to be acutely aware. Like I told you about having some past connections with, the first thing that in Nazi Germany, before it was even Nazi Germany, the first thing they did was attack gender clinics. The first, all those books that they were burning, those big piles of books, those were gender study books. Those were gender clinic books. These were books on homosexuality. These were books. That was the first thing that they went after. And then even after the war was finished and they were taking people out of concentration camps, they were taking Jews out of concentration camps. They were leaving a lot of Romani in. They were leaving all the homosexual and queer people in. They were leaving all the trans people in. They just went to different jails because it was still illegal.
Ouch.
So they were
the, we don't know.
So they were
the
first people attacked and the last people left alone. And I think that it's no coincidence that as we're seeing a rise in the extreme right, we're seeing a rise in attacks on genderqueer, homosexual and trans people, because this is very much a repetition of history. Like we were saying, propaganda works, and I'm sure that there's tons of propaganda that I currently am falling for, right? And divide and conquer works. Divide and rule works, right?
Well, and if you say something that's not true mm-hmm. enough times, people start to believe mm-hmm. it. We're seeing this right mm-hmm. now.
Well, and especially when we're like, oh, think of the children. It's like the first thing to go for, right? Which is so wild to me too, like coming back to that whole thing where I'm like, I totally agree. Like, let's think about the children. Let's actually like start respecting children as human beings. Mm. Let's actually start like humanizing children instead of just, I don't know, trying to control them and see them as like little us's and see them as their own people, the future that we won't be a part of, and trying to provide the best and most stable platform that we can for them so that they can build their future, so that when the next kids come along, there can be an even more stable platform so that they can build their future. And like us trying to edit what their future looks like now, it's the same thing as when somebody else is self-centering themselves in my life. Well, if I was in your shoes and this is what I do, is we're doing the same thing to the future. Oh, well, if I was in their shoes, this is what we don't know what they're going to do, because it's their future. We don't know what that world is going to look like. We don't know what they're going to need. We don't know. So to me, it seems so collectively self-centered for us in this day and age to center ourselves in the narrative of the future.
Wouldn't it be better if we built up their autonomy and gave them agency over their decision-making and let them experience everything?
Yeah. I mean, this might be a bit of a digression. Like, do you know about the black moths in Europe, in England?
I vaguely have heard that.
So there was, before the turn of the Industrial Revolution in England, there's the birch forests everywhere, and there was these white moths flying everywhere throughout England, and everybody knew these white birch moths, these white moths. And then the Industrial Revolution happened, and there's, you know, the birch trees are getting covered in smog, and a bunch of biologists were like, oh my gosh, we're not seeing these white moths anymore. The white moths are disappearing. And so they did this big, huge study and went out wanting to find out, is the Industrial Revolution having an impact? Is it killing off these moths? We can't have them dying off. They're a food source for other animals. Is this going to be a problem? And when they went out and did the study, what they found was that they still lived. They still existed. They just weren't seeing them because they were black now. the white moths had always had black moth variants being born and coming out into the world. It's just that against the white birch tree, they stood out. And so they were easy target and they were getting picked off by hawks. But these variants continued to be born. And then when the Industrial Revolution came along, there's the trees getting covered with black, and now the darker moths are able to hide. Oh. They're able to camouflage better, oh. And the white moths are what's standing out. It's the exact same species. It's just that the black moths aren't standing out now. And I think about this a lot when it comes to our human species, especially when it comes to anything even vaguely genocidal. Do you know what I mean? Like trying to edit genes or trying, you know what I mean? Like anytime that subject comes up, I think a lot about this because I'm like, we don't know what the future is going to bring. If we pare ourselves, if we pare our species down collectively into this one homogenous thing, then we don't remain collect. Like the thing that has made us as a species so strong is our adaptability. The reason we're adaptable, the reason that we're so flexible and adaptable is because we have so much variation. And if we don't have that variation, we aren't adaptable anymore as a collective species, right? So like, what if we cut off our left hand and then we get into a future where if we don't have a left hand, we're not going to survive as a species.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we owe it to ourselves as a collective species to stop cutting off our own fingers and to stop cutting off our own hands and to stop cutting off our own feet.
I keep calling that shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah. I'm like, you don't, and it, like to stop centering ourselves. Okay, like right now it's dangerous to be trans, but that doesn't mean get rid of all trans people.
It's dangerous to be different.
Yeah. And I mean,
I don't know why we're
I don't
so
want to sound like
that.
I'm disrespecting it, because like I do actually understand, like, you can't have a fickle society that's changing its mind every 5 minutes. You can't have a society that's like, oh, a new person came along with a new idea and we're all going to change our minds for this person. Because then again, we would never have gotten anywhere. We do need to have a certain amount of like, no, this is the way we need it to be. We can't be changing for every little thing. So I get the instinct. And I do think that it's an important instinct, but I think it needs balance. I think really what we're missing right now is that balance, that I respect your need to be careful and to slowly make a decision and to slowly come around. I respect that you want to be educated first. I respect that you want to understand that first. What I don't understand is you not opening yourself to that education, not opening yourself to that understanding, not finding that balance. We all like the hero's journey. We all like hearing about the hero and the hero's journey, and we all want to hear about their story. But what we're all kind of not realizing is that backdrop, that setting for the hero's journey, the villages that they walk through, the things that they go along their way, that entire backdrop, that's us. The entire setting for that hero's journey, that's us as a collective. We create that backdrop. We are that narrative.
So the hero needs to be exposed to things.
Yeah.
The hero also needs to fail regularly in order to succeed.
Yeah.
You have to make mistakes to learn from them.
Yeah. And so, and sometimes like the hero goes through their journey and they learn these great things and they bring these great things back and it's great stories and wonderful things. And that starts to shape the collective, and the collective will slowly change and slowly come around. And we've seen that throughout history. We've seen this progression of like people learning and educating, and then it changes slowly and it goes forward. I think it's okay for progression to happen slowly. I'm not impatient, but that doesn't ease my fear, because I still do live in the time that I live in. I can understand why people are slow to come around. In the meantime, I guess I feel like I want more people to be a little bit more aware that it's one thing to be slow to come around, and it's another thing to be slow to help, if that makes sense.
I worry that we shut things off too quickly.
Yeah.
That we say no too fast. Yeah. There's no maybe. There's no coming to the table and we're all going to work together and find a solution that works for everybody.
Yeah.
There needs to be more equity in the conversation.
Yeah.
We need to get rid of that power dynamic where the hero has all the power and nobody else's. Because, as you said, the hero only got there because of everyone helping.
Yeah.
We're all in this as a group.
Yeah.
And there needs to be no power dynamic.
From another perspective, we live in a culture in our Western society that is really based on individualism. And I really appreciate a lot of like Eastern philosophies and whatnot, because it's a lot more based on collectivism. But I do think between the two, you need balance between the two as well. If you have people who are super, super, super individualized, I think that if you're super individualized and completely out of touch with the community and completely out of touch with the collective, you're very easy to manipulate. And I think if you're completely out of touch with your individualism and fully immersed in the community and you have no sense of individual identity, you're very easy to manipulate. I think that in order for as a collective, for us all to be harder to manipulate, I think we need that balance between the two. We need to be two sides of the same coin. We need to recognize that you are an individual as yourself, and you are also part of something bigger. You are also part of this collective. Right. You are also we. Right. We are we as well. Right. And finding that balance and remembering, again, like having that true empathy, decentering yourself from other people's narratives and remembering things like, okay, you could be this incredible person that's done all of these amazing things in the world, but if I took... You're the person that invented the microwave, right? What an incredible invention. It's completely changed so many things about the world. But if I disappear everybody else on the planet and I give you your microwave, you're just meat out in the forest. As an individual in this world, what are you? You're just another animal that's now part of the food chain. It's like working together. And so like remembering that and coming to the table with humility, if you're a person that's used to having a lot more privilege and you're used to people in that position sort of expect you to pander to them. Do you know what I mean?
Well, because there's that power difference, right?
Yeah. How can we really have an honest conversation? How can you really expect to get honest feedback and genuine feedback if you're not allowing people to be honest and genuine?
Yes.
Right? And if I have to perform for you, then all you're ever going to understand is a performance.
And you're expected to be grateful.
Yeah.
And I have a real problem with that, because then you're honestly not going to get good feedback that way. If I have to constantly be told that I should be grateful for whatever you've done for me.
And then what you get out of this is what you're going to put into it. Like with everybody else.
Yeah.
What I get out of life is what I put into it. That's just how it works being a human being. Like,
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world. Not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become... human, you know, that's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
I'm Allie Howard from Nature's Pantry. We're proud to support Suddenly I See on CICK Community Radio.
You are listening to Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area on CICK 93.9 FM. I'm Christine Bruce, and today I'm going solo in the host chair. Joining me for the second of a two-part series on genderqueer kids and transitioning is Reagan Polgar, Laszlo's mother. Earlier, Reagan and I talked about how to talk about transitioning and the regulations around gender and transitioning. And now, we want to end this topic with a quick discussion of media representations and how those messages can be applied to your toolkit.
Okay, one last conversation.
Yeah.
Media representations. Now, when I read this in the book, I thought, oh, I don't know if I know any media. What kind of life am I leading here? But then I realized part of that is because I don't own a television. So I'm not exposed to very much, right? I watch Netflix, but that's not quite the same.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized that I'd been exposed to Elliot Page. Mm-hmm. And I ran right out and bought the book because I wanted to know more. Mm-hmm. And Elliot Page's book really exposes a lot of things that I don't ever see.
Yeah.
And I need to. I need to understand this better. And then there were the people like Ivan Coyote. And I don't know if you remember the name Faith Fundal, but they were a broadcaster on CBC in BC for a while.
They changed.
They transitioned while they were broadcasting.
Oh,
and
really
I thought,
cool.
This is so awesome. Yeah. But I brought this up to you the other day, Reagan, when we were discussing this conversation. And you said, watch the documentary Will and Harper.
Yeah.
So I ran right out and watched it all in one sitting.
Oh, you did.
And
that's
it was so fabulous, because there were a lot of narrow views that that Harper was exposed to. So for listeners, Will Ferrell, a friend, a colleague who transitioned, and they chose the name Harper, and they expressed that they had transitioned to Will Ferrell, who was trying to be careful how they expressed their support. And they decided that they would do a trip across the states together and expose themselves to things, expose themselves to situations that might be difficult or awkward. Sometimes they succeeded, sometimes it was a big failure, but they did it publicly. And it was a really eye-opening thing for me, because it takes a lot of courage to do something like that. And I want to tell you that the one line that really jumped out for me, and I think it's a good thing for us to end on, maybe something that we can talk about, is Harper said, a lot of transitioning is learning to accept yourself.
It really is. And it really touches on everything that we've talked so far today. You take those baby steps and finding your way along the way, having conversations with other people and being able to accept yourself and being able to set boundaries. There are people who have a difficult time with boundaries as far as they might step over boundaries, but there are also people who have a hard time setting those boundaries and don't know where to set them, right? And so part of that self-acceptance is being able to set boundaries and having the self-confidence to be able to keep them and being able to keep them with grace and giving people that grace to make mistakes on both sides of it. Okay, so you overasked a little bit. And I think that self-acceptance on both sides, like the self-acceptance of a person who's transitioning to be able to accept themselves and the self-acceptance of the people around them, so that we can all just, just accept that we're human and humans are fallible. And that really is what defines us. If there's any one thing that really brings all of us together, it's that none of us are perfect. And just being able to accept that so that we can move forward. But yeah, transition to self-acceptance. I liked that line too. That really is what it's about. And even the same thing with the surgeries and gender confirmation surgery. It's about getting to that point of, being able to look at yourself and being like, yes, that's me. Of that self-acceptance. This is who I am.
Who am I and what am I comfortable with?
And I can look at myself and I feel me. It's part of Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, right? You need to have that self-acceptance in order to be able to get to the next level, in order to be able to get to the point that you can self-actualize. So it seems ridiculous to expect kids to be able to be at the top of this thing where they're self-actualized and able to be out here preaching to all of these adults when they can't even get to the point of self-acceptance because they don't have that point of foundational community that comes before that.
Community needs to be really encouraging.
That's the bottom of the Maslow's hierarchy, isn't it? You need to have that safety in your community. If you don't have that safety in your community, then you can't get to that next step of self-acceptance.
And that's one of the gifts that Laszlo and I have talked about a few times now. I want to be there brave enough to support Laszlo, to be a defender if need be, but mostly just to say, I like you. I like where you are right now. And I'm really glad you're part of my landscape. Because that gives Laszlo confidence to move forward. And if Laszlo's moving forward, then that's better for me. It's better for all of us.
It's pretty cool. And it's really neat to get to be part of people's journeys too. And I think it's the same thing for Laszlo. It's cool for him to get to be a part of other people's journeys as well, right?
One last comment that I want to make, and that is thank you for coming and speaking to me today, but also thank you for being the person who has been supportive of Laszlo in their journey up to now, because they wouldn't have made it this far without you, without a parent that said, okay, I see what's happening here. How can I support you?
Yeah, I don't like thinking about how it might have gone.
Yeah.
But that was a big part of it for me too. When Laszlo first came out, I was very scared. And my first piece of advice to him was to keep it quiet. That I let him know, like, I accept him no matter what. But I knew when I came out in support of Laszlo, I did lose a lot of friends and I did lose a lot of family. But I wasn't worried about it for me, but I was just like, hey, you know, like, you're a kid, I'm a single mom, we already have a lot kind of stacked against us, unfortunately, because of me. It's like, I don't have this privilege to be able to extend to you. So we're already in this sort of disenfranchised place, and it was scary. And so I was like, let's keep it under wraps. You can be gender nonconforming, or you can be they, them, like, let's not go farther than that. It's dangerous and it can be pretty scary. And then I just immediately was losing him, and he was okay with it. I mean, he said he was okay with it, and he was clearly, he was trying. He trusted me and he was going along with me because I'm his mom, but it was clearly affecting him in a really negative way. His light went out. It was like just this kid who had just been so full of life and love and stories and could just enrapture a whole room. Like when he was five, he would talk story and the whole room would be engaged and paying attention to him. Like he just has this light. And I just watched that light go out. And I was like, I can't be the person that puts that light out.
Yeah.
I can't be that person. And I got him a therapist and was like, talk to him about anything, even stuff about me. Nothing's off limits. Like, and then, yeah. And then with the therapist kind of confirmed my fear of like, yes, it's because I wasn't allowing him to be out about this. It's because this light in him needs to shine, that if it can't, it just starts to fade. And there are people who can live under a bushel. There are people who can put their heads down. He's just not one of those people. And he's not going to be able to accept himself if he lives like that. So I changed.
Yeah.
And I started learning about it more and started addressing my fears and addressing the stuff that was concerning me. And it hasn't always been easy. And I have like lost a lot of people. Part of the grieving process of losing people that you did, especially people you didn't expect. There were people I expected to go that way. There were some people I didn't. That was harder. And so there was a grieving process for those people for sure. But you know, really what it comes down to is they already weren't there for me.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know that yet.
Yeah.
And Laszlo gave me the opportunity to know that that was where their limit was. And I think that's part of the fear for everybody when it comes to them not accepting other trans people. There's limits to this acceptance. You get scared. And I recognize that, like, when Laszlo first came out to me, I wasn't as accepting as I wish I had been. And it was because I was scared. And so I can empathize with the people who aren't as accepting because I know what that fear is like. But you can do better.
Yeah.
And I did better. The biggest thing, the thing that's gone the farthest for me for easing that fear was just educating myself on it. Once I started learning about it, I was like, oh, damn, the propaganda on this is crazy. It really is made out to be such a big, scary thing, and it really isn't. And the more that I've learned, the more I'm like, wow, it really just isn't that big of a deal. It doesn't need to be that big of a deal.
Yeah. It is hard to convince people, yeah. But you know, the more we talk about it and the more exposure it gets,
mm-hmm.
and the more you meet people
yeah.
who are genderqueer yeah. and realize how cool they are.
Yeah.
Just like everybody else. They're
yeah.
cool.
Right?
They're well, just average human beings. And
yeah.
we've turned them into this package of scary and
yeah.
and weird and
mm-hmm. And I think too, like a lot of people have been like, well, I don't know if I'd be able to do that if I was a mother like you. And my response to that has always just been, well, the thing is, they're going to get cast out of different social circles because of this regardless. You are cast out. Yes, there's other people that you become your chosen family and you kind of like form your little groups and stuff together. But also you are outside the protective circle together, which means the other cast outs that are probably cast out for a much better sufficient reason because they are dangerous and are making very dangerous choices. They're also outside the protective circle with you. It was kind of a no-brainer that I'm like, there are going to be people in the world that cast my son out regardless. If I am also one of those, then he has nobody.
Yeah.
I would rather go out into the cold with him and protect him than turn my back and have him go out into the cold alone. So
if the hardest part of transitioning is accepting yourself, yeah. then you need other people around you to accept you first.
Yeah.
To allow you that dignity
yeah.
to accept yourself.
Yeah. I am his community. His sister is his community. His dad is community. We do have family. We have a lot of people that have stayed and have supported and have formed community and have formed around him. And that has helped him to have that foundation so that he can get to self-acceptance, so that he can keep his light shining, so that he can just, yeah, keep being this big, bright, beautiful, flamboyant,
awesome.
He's amazing.
Awesome. Love him.
He's a whole character, and he always has been. He's
yeah.
just, he's great. It's really cool to get to see the man that he's becoming and
yeah.
the adult that he's been growing into. So. Yeah. I'm really proud to get to have been a part of that.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But yeah, thank you. And thank you for having me.
And that's it for the two-part series, Gender Queer Kids and Transitioning, on Suddenly I See, this week on CICK 93.9 FM in the Smithers area. I'd like to give a special thank you to Laszlo's mother, Reagan Polgar, for joining me and sharing her perspective. Something Reagan said in this conversation affected me and Laszlo. Separately, we watched the movie Will and Harper, a road trip documentary that follows Will Ferrell and his old friend Harper Steele after she transitions. Afterward, Laszlo and I discussed the impact it had on us, and we want to share that conversation with you in the next episode. Meanwhile, here's the song that Kristen Wiig and Sean Douglas co-wrote for the documentary. I encourage you to watch the movie before the next episode. See you in a couple of weeks, Wizzy.
Just a couple old friends and a couple brand new breasts. They're off to see America, not sure what they'll find. Open to the open road, only to be reminded that a friend is a friend is a friend till the end. Coast to coast takes 3,000 miles to get this close. Did Lewis and Clark dare to go to these emotional places? This is a greater unknown, so I think my two are the bravest. Harper and Will go west, like Thelma and Louise, but with a lot less death. They're off to see America, just one girl and a guy. Open to the open road, only to be reminded that a friend is a friend is a friend till the end. They'll find their way, even when they don't know what to say. Known each other for forever and a day. With her grown-up elf and ooh, this is the jazzy part. I assume there's no room in the car for me. You're out of being invited, but I'll play my part. This one's from the heart. Harper and Will go west, not prospect gold. This is a richer quest. They're off to see America, follow their own signs. Open to the open road, only to be reminded that a friend is a friend is a friend is a friend. A friend is a friend is a friend till the end. Till the end.